Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for you, as usual. The good comes in the form of exposing the truth, really, when it comes to the president's position on the approaching continuing resolution issue, funding the government, in other words, and the looming debt ceiling fight, which is only a couple weeks behind that. The president has tried to portray congressional Republicans as the ideological extremists by, at least some of them, trying to attach the defunding of Obamacare to ongoing funding of the government. But Speaker Boehner, who yesterday said there would be a vote to continue funding the government at existing levels with the exception of Obamacare, released this video showing that perhaps it's the president, in fact, who's being really rigid here. Here's an excerpt from the video.
What I haven't been willing to negotiate, and I will not negotiate, is on the debt ceiling.
I'm just going to have to reiterate, John, the president's made clear he's not going to be negotiating over the debt
Look,
limit.
The president's been very clear. He's not negotiating on the debt limit.
What I will not do is to have that negotiation.
Let me reiterate what our position is, and it is unequivocal. We will not negotiate with Republicans in Congress. He will certainly meet with Putin.
I did discuss this with President Putin. This is something that is not new. I've been discussing this with President Putin for some time now.
Basically, the point that the Speaker's office is making here, Jim, is that the president is completely unwilling to negotiate with Republicans, but at the same time, he's more than happy to work very closely with an autocrat like Vladimir Putin and radically change his approach to Syria's alleged chemical weapons use. So pretty effective ad. I just hope a lot of people see it.
I think it says something a bit about the way this administration approaches the choices before it. The Wall Street Journal editors had a good editorial today. Said that finally in John Boehner and the House Republicans, Barack Obama has finally found an enemy he's willing to bomb, which is a rather harsh way of putting it, but I think is accurate. I think the president was conflicted throughout the Syria conflict, that his role as the enforcer of international norms on chemical weapons was turning him into George W. Bush, was turning him into the military aggressor that he always saw as the villain in his scenarios. So because he's been, you know, rather weak and ineffective in this one, he held an event demonizing Republicans as the Navy Yard shooting was still going on. And in this, he is really eager to say, you know, that the House Republicans' position, which is that Obamacare is bad, and oh, by the way, it's unpopular, and oh, by the way, they keep having to delay parts because they're not ready. And oh, by the way, the security for the databases everybody's putting their public health information into is not necessarily ready. You can run down a whole bunch of reasons why Obamacare is bad, but Obama's not willing to negotiate on that. A good way of putting it is that he's willing to delay the parts of Obamacare that he wants to delay, but not the parts that anybody else wants to delay. The contrast between the way the president handled Syria and the way the president handles congressional opposition is rather revealing. I think it says a lot about Obama's worldview, that ultimately he wasn't really put on earth to give that much grief to the Assads and Putins of the world. He was put on earth to create difficulties for anybody who disagrees with him in the domestic arena, who he really does kind of tend to see as an unreasonable enemy of all that is good and righteous, and not someone who deserves to be negotiated with or treated as an equal partner in the legislative process, because his morality, his righteousness is so clear for everyone. He can't understand why anyone would question that. So I think, you know, kudos to John Boehner for putting up this ad. We'll see how many people notice it, but I think the contrast is worthwhile and, you know, probably is worth beating the drum on.
It would be great if Republicans were presenting a united front against President Obama as these fiscal deadlines approach, but that is not the case. The last several weeks, certainly, even a couple months, only 14 Republicans in the Senate out of 46 have signed on to this effort to try and defund Obamacare and rally public support behind it, which the latest Rasmussen poll says 51% of Americans are now behind. Other polls suggest it's significantly less than that. And of course, John Boehner announced earlier this week that there would be that vote. And now the House Republicans are upset with Ted Cruz, admitting that right now the Senate doesn't have the votes to pass this. And even if they did, of course, the president could veto it, and then the supporters of the defunding wouldn't have the votes to override the veto. Jim, the question now becomes as to whether conservatives are digging their party into a hole that they're really going to pay a big price for, or whether they're the only ones willing to fight for the eradication of something that all of them say they really want to see go.
It's been kind of intriguing to see folks like Sean Duffy, who I don't think of as being a squish on these sorts of issues, really lashing into Ted Cruz. And Ted Cruz really has kind of turned into a lightning rod in this debate. And the perception of House Republicans, I think it's a fair critique, is making an observation. Look, Ted Cruz has been saying, and Mike Lee have been saying, look, it's time to stand firm, hold your ground, listen to the American people, vote to defund Obamacare. Now, of course, the House has done this a whole bunch of times. But let's say the House passes a bill that, you know, eliminates funding for Obamacare and they send it to the Senate. You know it's never going to pass the Senate, right?
Very unlikely.
And then it goes to the president. How likely is it that President Obama will sign legislation defunding not only his signature domestic policy accomplishment, but something that's named after himself?
Zero.
Zero, okay? So everybody in the House who's up for re-election in November 2014 has this rather challenging issue of voting for something that probably will never become law, that could force a government shutdown, that could come back to bite them. Ted Cruz is not up for re-election until 2018. Mike Lee is not up for re-election until 2016. So House Republicans feel like they're being asked to take the enormous amount of risk for this vote. They've been called the surrender caucus by Cruz and Lee and guys like that for a while. And now they say if they pass it, it is a question of whether it even gets voted on by the Senate. So they kind of feel like Cruz and Lee have asked them to take all the risk, and while they sit in their very comfortable seats from Texas and Utah. Walk me through my thinking on this, Greg, if there's anywhere I have been wrong in my assessment of the likelihood of this scenario.
Well, it's very unlikely that it would actually take effect and defund Obamacare. I think the point that's being made here is important on a number of fronts. You point out in the Morning Jolt today, you know, what's the plan B for those who want to defund Obamacare? And the question could remain the same for those who don't. What is their plan A, much less their plan B? It seems that it's to give Obama exactly what he wants on the continuing resolution. Speaking with Congressman Mulvaney a couple weeks ago, he says, you know, we're probably not going to see the defunding passed, but it's a good initial bargaining chip to possibly get a one-year delay. I would say that that's pretty highly unlikely as well. But there might be some middle ground rather than giving the president exactly what he wants here, and you'll never know unless you put up that first marker pretty far away from where the Democrats want to be.
So in other words, this is primarily a negotiating tactic.
Obviously, that is their ultimate goal, is to defund Obamacare or have it repealed. They don't have the votes right now, but if you're in a position to make the statement and to use the power of the House majority, which does begin the funding process for everything, the American people hate this thing. Otherwise, where's the fight coming from? We always hail these repeal votes, which have no chance of passing as well. So how is that any more ineffective than what's already been tried?
My reading of it is that the moment the government shuts down, the leverage of the Republicans shrinks. I think that they will be blamed for it, and I think that the public will say that as much as they dislike Obamacare, they don't think a government shutdown is worth it's worth the aggravation of a government shutdown to stop it. I wish the public did not have that opinion, and I'd love to see the public opinion change. I don't think that's going to happen, though. And it seems like it's a very, very big bet by the likes of Cruz and Lee that public opinion will not shift against them. I mean, Cruz had this great line a couple weeks ago at a rally in which he said, Republicans need to do something they haven't done in a really long time. That is stand up and win the argument. The audience in front of him roared with applause. Yes, that's exactly what we have to do. The problem is we're not very good at it. If you're not capable of doing that, should you pursue that particular strategy? Or at the very least, if you don't have that particular strategy, you need a plan B. And everyone who's a fan of the Lee and Cruz approach has never quite laid out for me what happens if they shut down the government, public opinion turns against Republicans, and then what's, you know, the second option? And there isn't much. And I guess everyone kind of thinks that in a government shutdown, eventually, if you make the argument frequently enough, loudly enough, and hopefully persuasively enough, public opinion would shift, it would turn against Obama, and Obama would get blamed, and Obama would end up signing something he doesn't want to sign. I am not quite convinced of that scenario, but I have a feeling I'm spitting into the wind, to use the cleaner metaphor I could use there.
Last question before we exit this. What is plan A for the Republicans who don't like this strategy, both for funding the government and for trying to derail Obamacare before the vast majority of it kicks in?
This does accomplish one goal I'd like to see, which is put Senate Democrats in as many awkward votes as possible between now and November 2014. I don't think you will repeal Obamacare so long as Obama is in the White House. So in light of that, as much as you'd like to repeal Obamacare, you have to recognize that the realistic best case scenario is a Republican president in 2017, Republican Senate, Republican House, all unified on repealing Obamacare in early 2017. People may not like hearing that, but I don't think that pretending that we can somehow strong arm Obama into doing something that I just think he's never going to do is really that much more of a helpful approach to, you know, resolving the Obamacare crisis.
Speaking of Obamacare, there are a lot of people who hate this thing, regardless of what the Republican strategies might be. There's an organization called Generation Opportunity, which put out a pretty unsettling ad about what Obamacare might look like. Imagine a young woman joining Obamacare and making her first trip to the doctor's office, and it certainly appears to be the gynecologist. And here's how part of the ad goes.
You swing on over, scoot on down, and try to make yourself comfortable. Okay, let's have a look.
And at this point, the doctor leaves the room. There you hear the door closing. The girl's confused as to why the doctor left, and then all of a sudden, a giant kind of Uncle Sam mascot pops up from between her knees, essentially. And then the script reads, "Don't let the government play doctor. Opt out of Obamacare." So, Jim, if anybody can see that and not get the complete creeps, good luck to them. I don't know if people will be more shocked than motivated by this, but it certainly paints a chilling picture.
First of all, Greg, I want to thank you for describing it so that I didn't have to. It's worth noting the Uncle Sam. Remember that weird feeling that the Burger King plastic face, you know, mascot gave you in the commercials from a few years back? That's like this crossed with, say, Heath Ledger's The Joker. This is a pretty intense political message. Rob Zombie said it's freaking him out. Eli Roth said it's too graphic. David Lynch said it's disturbing. I actually reached out. Demon Sheep said, "I got nothing." If the first challenge to a group wanting to spread a political message is to get noticed and to break through the noise, well, Greg, this does it. I just wish the ad had mentioned something kind of specific. First of all, the government's going to be collecting your medical records. The Health and Human Services Department also wants doctors to be collecting behavioral and psychological records as well. This is all going into government databases that are hackable. So the federal government having your private health records, that's something that will resonate with a wide range of people. And it's almost metaphorically what they're getting at in this creepy commercial. I just kind of wish they had tied this unbelievably disturbing image to a policy issue, and it might have been a little more powerful. Already you're hearing a few folks on the left on Twitter saying, "Republicans are demonizing Uncle Sam!" And, you know, I kind of wish you could tie it back to why Obamacare is bad. Because as far as we know, the issue is not that when a woman goes to her OB-GYN, a creepy Uncle Sam will emerge and start inspecting. As far as we know, Greg. As far as we know.
Jim, it's been an interesting day. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Tomorrow has to be more normal, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.